Hi, this is Julie.
This is Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters. This is one of our special Satellite Sisters WordWrite Festival podcasts. I'm so happy to be talking today to just an absolutely delightful writer and a delightful person, someone who's been so supportive of my writing career and an inspiration. She's also one of many, many kids, and I think that's why we love Claire Cook here at Satellite Sisters. You know Claire's name because she's written nearly a dozen books. Well, how many books have you written, Claire? 11, 12 books for women?
This is my 12th.
12
books. Novels and then my first nonfiction book. Yeah,
that's right. Claire is here today to talk about Never Too Late. It's her new book about reinvention. So listen up, Satellite Sisterhood, because I know this is a topic that I get asked about all the time that you are interested in. And Claire, who sort of built a career writing main characters who have reinvented themselves, all of a sudden looked at her own life and said, hey, I've done some reinvention too. She's become a reinvention expert, speaking at conferences all over the country. And now she has put all her secrets down on paper. Her new book is called Never Too Late, Your Roadmap to Reinvention Without Getting Lost Along the Way. Hi, Claire. Welcome back to Satellite Sisters.
It's so great of you to have me again, Lee, and thank you so much. I'm such a fan of all of you, and I sort of feel like I'm almost a little bit in the family since we
totally
come from.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's All-Star Satellite Sister is how we think of you, Claire. I mean, you know, you have been writing fiction with the reinvention theme for a really long time. What made you actually decide, you know what, I should write a nonfiction book about reinvention, just take it head on? Why now?
Well, you know, I really have wanted to write this book for years, but so a lot of things aligned to make it happen now. But I think the biggest one was finally I could. Every time I brought it up through the course of my, you know, 11 novels, which I loved writing, I'd say, you know, everywhere I go, people just want to talk about reinvention. You know, maybe I should write a book about that. And I'd get the we'll see, which, you know, we know what that means when you say it to your kids. and it just, you know, could I have just written it anyway? Of course. But I was under contract to write novels. And I just, where do you find the time to actually do it? And so I'd go out and talk about it. And certainly my novels fit in, but not in as direct a way as a nonfiction book about reinvention does. And so finally, it was just the time was right. It was also time for me to kind of tell the truth about a lot of things, which I always do in person. But, you know, it can be a little bit different in interviews. You just don't have time to get into it all, unless I'm talking to you, and I know you will. But so it just happened. And I just I came into this with a place from a place of heart, just saying, I want to share everything I have that might possibly help another woman in her own reinvention. And if it turns into a long blog post, great, I'll stick it up on my website. But as soon as I started writing it as a book, it just felt right. And I kept going. And I kind of, you as a novelist, I think will get this, I just kind of kept layering the stories the way I would if I were writing a novel. And I thought, I don't know if you can write a nonfiction book this way, but I'll find out. and it kind of, you know, I think the narrative structure makes it a fun read, hopefully.
Completely. Yeah, I was really privileged to read it sort of ahead of its publication.
I was privileged to include the Satellite Sisters too. So thank you for all the great stuff you gave me.
Well, that's what makes it fun. It's your story. And we'll get into this a little bit later. But you also talk to like dozens and dozens and dozens of other people. So
And not a celebrity in there.
No. I miss Gwyneth's voice in it. But
she tried hard to get it. And she wanted a little goop in there, but no, I shouldn't say that.
But I think that's the kind of the layering all told, the whole like picture of Never Too Late is that you did it, but also dozens and dozens and dozens of other women have done it in different careers.
Yeah.
You have sort of changing from, well, we've told your story on Satellite Sisters before, but you're right. You did tell the truth in this book. There's a lot of honesty in this book, Claire, because
that was a new experience.
Yeah. I had kind of the Hollywood version of your story. You were the sports mom. You wrote your first novel at 45. A book or two later, Must Love Dogs was your breakout novel. It was made into a movie by Gary David Goldberg. It's a cult classic. And that was just, that's like a spine-chilling, fantastic novelist as hero story. But it was a lot more complicated than that, wasn't it? So what was that leap like to actually go, okay, now I'm going to have to tell the whole story. And then we want to know the whole story of how Must Love Dogs got made.
Well, you know, I've always told the story when I was out on tour or talking to women. You know, I've never really hidden any of that stuff. But I think a part of wanting to write this book was I realized I'm never going to meet everyone in the world to be able to tell them the truth, just to demystify all that stuff. It's so easy, you know, for me to look at your life and think, oh, how glamorous. She's one of the Satellite Sisters and this and that. But you and I have talked and we know that, yeah, some really good stuff has happened to all of us. But there's also the flip side of what really happened. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was just important to share those pieces of it. So in this particular case, what happened, and also I love to write books with happy endings. So, you know, I also have that tendency to only want to tell the good stuff. But if we don't share what really happens with other women, how are they going to figure out how to do it for themselves in their own lives? And I really, really wanted to do that. So in the Must Love Dog story, what's kind of out there is that I was this unknown author who, you know, someone plucked me from the pile of unknown books and made me a star with the movie, which not that I've ever been a star, but that was kind of the thing. But it really didn't happen that way at all. Must Love Dogs was my second novel, and it was one of those lucky books that got a lot of breaks. So it was doing real well as a book that just people were telling friends, you know, a lot of good word of mouth was happening. I did have a film agent. There were some nibbles. Things almost happened, as you and I both know, and then they don't, and then, you know, they do. But I was doing a book tour for the paperback at this point. It had come out in hardcover first, and I was at a little independent bookstore in Vermont, and after I left, you know, you sign the extra copies, and they make a nice display as you walk in the door. And so I went on to the next state or wherever I was going for the next event, and the next day, Gary David Goldberg, who created MASH, and he didn't create MASH, he wrote for MASH, he created Spin City and Family Ties, and he had a house in the area, and he walked in just looking for something to read, and he saw the pile of books, picked up a copy of Must Love Dogs. His five dogs were waiting for him in the car. He turned it over. I mean, really, how lucky can you get? The universe
right.
was so throwing that to me. And turned it over, saw it was about a big Irish family. His wife, Diana Meehan, was from a big Irish family. And then he took it home. No intention of making a movie. He'd already made one movie, but most of his career was TV. And just took it home to read it. And he said he poured a glass of wine and sat down in his favorite chair and didn't get up until he finished the book, and maybe the wine too.
Yeah.
And then the next morning he called my literary agent in New York and asked if anybody had it, and you know, he just was in love with the book and wanted to make the movie. So, you know,
see, that's the Hollywood version right there. Like, oh, okay. And then the next thing you know, you're on the red carpet, but it really didn't happen that way.
It didn't happen that way. So it looked like it was, and I'm completely stunned. I'm still you know, not getting any of this as it's happening. But so an offer was made, which was a crazy offer, you know, should the movie actually happen. I don't know if everyone realizes this, but first your book gets optioned and you get a nice chunk of money for that and it pays some bills. But when those main cameras roll, that's when the big payout is.
Right.
And that's the thing. I mean, I know you know that, but listeners may, yeah.
Think that big chunk of money is getting less and less these days. But yeah, I think.
Well, this was the movie came out in 2005.
Right.
So we were all living different lives before 2008. So, but anyway, life-changing if it were to happen. So a contract comes in, and of course, an offer is made, and of course, I say yes to everything because it's just complete fantasy to me. But it's a lovely offer, and paperwork is drawn up. And then one day, my literary agent calls and furious and said, I cannot believe I have to tell you that the offer has been rescinded and, you know, it's gone. And you just do not do this once the paperwork has been drawn up. And I'm completely numb. I have no idea what she's saying. Like, I'm hearing words, but it means nothing. So I just reached for something positive to say, because really not having a movie deal was just more normal to me than
having.
Yeah, it's just like, whatever. So I said, well, you know, Lisa, the good news is Gary David Goldberg thinks I can write. Can you get his address so I can send him a thank you note? And she just went crazy.
Which is such a nice, well-bred thing to do.
Yeah, I went to parochial school, you know.
He's kind of, he broke my heart and crushed my soul. But I'm going to send him a thank you note for that.
Well, you know, what are you going to do?
Right.
You
know? I know.
So I was just looking for something. And honestly, I was thinking, it's not like he pulled out of it, or at least he didn't say he pulled out of it, because I couldn't write after all. So I was still hanging on to the fact that he was initially attracted to the book,
yes.
You know? So so anyway, she called me a Pollyanna or whatever, and I persisted, and she eventually emailed me the mailing address for Sit, you know, Ubu Productions, mm-hmm. Sit Ubu Sit, yeah. From the end of his things. And so I wrote him a thank you note, a long meandering thank you note saying, telling him what a big fan I was of his work and how I'd been watching, you know, seeing his byline his credits since, you know, I was in college and on and on and on. And I mailed it off to him and, you know, it's done, it's over. And then, I don't know, you know, a few days, a week later, a fax came rolling into my office. This is like way back in the day of faxes. And it was from him. And he said, from Gary David Goldberg. And he said, in all his years in Hollywood, it was the nicest, you know, the kindest, most humane letter he'd ever received. And he wanted me to know why he'd pulled out of the deal. And he had broken up with his agent and he hated Hollywood and it was an ugly business and he was never going to work in it again. Of course, as I got to know him better later, I realized he had these meltdowns periodically. but what he didn't want to do was tie up my novel when it was at its most valuable, because he was convinced someone would make Must Love Dogs into a movie. So of course, I'm coming from the place of needing to pay bills and having, right. You know, expensive kids with expensive, you know, activities and, you know, all of that. So I'm thinking, oh, just tie it up. I don't even care if you make it. Do you know what that option money could do for me? You know, I could get a new used minivan. So, but anyway, of course I didn't, because what was the point? So, so I just sent him a fax thanking him for explaining. And he had also said he had just come back from a long walk with his dog. So I wished him more long walks with his dogs and all of that. And, you know, that was it. That was the end. Sent it off to him and he faxed me back to thank me for my fax. And then I thanked him, you know, faxed him again. And we just started faxing each other. Yeah. You know, who has a fax pal? I had a fax pal. And we just.
Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here. And we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. Mm-hmm. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So Prose, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then posts it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, Prose. Prose is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at prose.com/sisters. And Prose is spelled P-R-O-S-E, prose.com/sisters. Thanks, Prose. Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do. Because there are just so many fun things to frame, Leanne, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah, any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leanne, they have already Framebridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you're going to be happy, okay? And that's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or see a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's framebridge.com. Thanks, Framebridge.
For one brilliant moment in time. But when I read that story in your book, Never Too Late, I thought there are so many lessons in this story right here. Because how many times, no matter what business you're in, has something fallen apart or a deal hasn't materialized or, you know, something doesn't quite happen where you stomp off, you're bitter. If you're the person, you know, my case, you hang your head like, oh, I failed. I didn't sell this. I didn't sell that. And I think all of us have been in that position where we feel like, well, that would have been great if it happened. But to know that you could actually resuscitate the whole project just by doing a decent thing. There's a lot of life lessons in there, Claire Cook.
Well, Leanne Dolan, you know, the thing is, the other piece of that is how often do we step back and let other people handle our lives, you know, and as an author, you're often not supposed to step in.
Right.
Like that's, you're supposed to leave that to the professionals. Let your agent speak to that person. Let your editor speak to that person. And anytime something has really worked out for me, and not to put down all these wonderful people who have supported me, but it's been because I jumped in and did it myself. And, you know, Gary said many times and in several interviews that he never, ever, ever would have circled back to my book had we not become friends. If I had not done that, he said he would have optioned any other book in the world because he knew he did a bad thing by pulling out, you know? But I made it okay because we reconnected and we were friends. So I think it really is a lesson that I learned that, you know, take the high road, do the right thing. We all like to think it's all about us. I mean, you know, something, it happened because I didn't, you know, maybe he liked someone else's book better and nobody wanted to tell me that or whatever. You know, we all, it's so easy to think the universe revolves around us. But really, the reason he pulled out had nothing to do with me. So because I, you know, let that be okay, It may well have been that he decided to never make a movie, but when he did, I was right there. So I don't know that I could have done that on purpose. It would have been, if I had tried to manipulate that situation, right. I think it would have shown, and he would have, I mean, how many people did he probably have in his face trying to get him to make a movie? But I think because it was real, because it was authentic, and you know, just do those things. And what's the worst that could have happened? He wouldn't have made the movie. Well, he wasn't going to make it anyway. So what do you have to lose?
Right, right. Well, so I think a lot of people go out of jobs. They're burning bridges. They're putting things up on Twitter. They're, you know, posting their grievances on Facebook.
Yeah.
And sometimes just swallowing hard and, you know, taking the high road.
I could have said there went my kids' college tuition or something. But, you know, I always think you take the high road. But I also did genuinely see a compliment in there that he, I mean, you know, the fact that he even read my book, let alone that he liked it, you know. So, and all throughout the movie experience, when it finally happened, we kept the communication very directly between the two of us. And that is rarely done. And I've had other books optioned and I was never able to have that sort of situation happen. And I'm kind of convinced that's a part of why they have not come to fruition. I think that we need to get in there and be in charge of our own lives and, you know, do it with, you know, grace and courtesy and be as nice as you can about it, but get in there and make it happen.
You know, you actually write, though, ironically, and Never Too Late, your roadmap to reinvention, that because Must Love Dogs was such a success, people didn't stop talking about it for years. You know, here we are talking about it, you know, 6-7 years later, and you had all these other books come out and books that did well, and you were out there speaking, and, you know, you were whining. I think you used the word whining to your agent.
Yeah.
Why does people only want to talk to me about Must Love Dogs, you know? And you had to actually come to terms with that success. You had to learn to re-love your dog, didn't you?
Yeah, I love that line. I thought that was great. You know, it was the oddest thing. And I think it was really important for me to write about that because it's that grass is always greener thing. You look at someone who's been lucky enough to have a movie or to get a book published or to, you know, whatever.
A single business success, you know, the one that created this campaign or, you know, her, you know, she did X, Y, and Z. Yeah. A lot of people have one big thing that they are known for, even though they work for years and years and years.
Absolutely. And I think that if I had come to terms with that right away, I'd probably be writing Must Love Hedgehogs now. I would have had no, you know, that would have been the extent of my career. I would have gone from, you know, D, E, F, G, you know, just kept going. And I don't think
worked for Sue Grafton. So don't.
Yeah, absolutely. But for me, I don't think there would have been a lot of growth there. So I'm not looking back in that sense at all. I'm really proud of every book I've written. I think I've grown a lot as a writer. But I also think I made it, I was so determined to escape Must Love Dogs because it was just in my face everywhere. I mean, I said this in the book, but literally I would go to a cocktail party and someone would always come up to me and say, do you ever think you'll write another book? Well, I'd written 10 since Must Love Dogs, but it was like I'd get some great publicity, but it, you know, and instead of showing the book I was out, you know, talking up behind me on the screen, you know, at a local television affiliate or something, there would be Must Love Dogs. And it's like, hello, I've got this other book out. So it got really complicated. And so I had a hard time with that. And then finally, it was just one of those great epiphanies. I said, this is ridiculous. I've had one of the luckiest breaks. Mm-hmm. Why am I whining? So I don't know that it actually changed my behavior in any specific way, but it just flipped it. And suddenly I was okay with it. And I'm just thinking, this is a great identifier. And it's a great door opener, to be honest. If I mention Must Love Dogs, it can kind of get me in. So it's wonderful if you're lucky enough to get something like that. I don't think you should let it consume you, but use it. Use what you've got.
We're talking to Claire Cook. She's an author, a reinventor, and now she's becoming a small media empire. Her new book is called Never Too Late, Your Roadmap to Reinvention Without Getting Lost Along the Way. For you, Claire, it is a departure. You read it, but you're also putting the book out yourself. You have spent the last couple of years really reinventing yourself. And I think it's easy for people to hear, oh, you're a writer and that's great. But you are becoming sort of a self-publisher. You've bought back all your own books. You're sort of completely running your own career and your own website now. Have you had any second thoughts? Because that is a big leap from writer to small media empire.
Well, you know, it's not something I chose necessarily. I think, you know, so many of us, are we doing things we would have chosen if the world didn't change so dramatically back in, say, you know, 2008-ish. And, you know, the publishing world is in a tailspin. And what happened for me is, and for so many other authors, is that after being, I mean, I had a fabulous ride. I was really, really lucky. I was, you know, with all the big publishers, being treated really well, being toured, you know, making wonderful advances. And suddenly it started to get a little bumpy out there because the publishing world was getting bumpy. And
like so many industries.
You absolutely.
Know? So
absolutely.
Across the board, people have had to sort of relearn, retool, revamp
Without
their
a
lives.
Doubt.
Yep.
And, you know, very much like what happened with the music world and the newspaper world and now the magazine world and so many others. So, so what did it for me was that my books, my babies, were not being well taken care of, and they were also not getting out there to my readers, who are my other babies who I love so much. So I just was had to get in there to take care of them. And some of my backlist books, through a lucky fluke, I got back the rights to Must Love Dogs, which I tell in detail if anyone is interested in the book. But then five of my other backlist books, the publisher who had published them went under, were bought out by another publisher who absolutely demonstrated that they had no real interest in them. They were just kind of part of the fire sale. So I just wanted to get them back and get them out there at a good price so my readers could and potential readers mm-hmm. could get their hands on them. So it's not, you know, sometimes you do things that you wouldn't necessarily see yourself doing. But I've also, so I started Marshbury Beach Books, named after Marshbury, the fictional town in a lot of my novels, and just hired a lawyer and started getting them back and putting them out there. And, you know, I think it's been a good thing for my books and for my readers because my books were being released for $24.99 in hardcover and ebooks were up by 12 something. And now I can put my ebooks at, you know, $4.99 or even the paper books are maybe 12. So I just feel that that's a good thing that I can do. And
but it is a totally different skill set than sitting down and writing fiction. And so how much did you have to learn?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
But I think technology stops a lot of women. I think trying to like absorb new technology and absorb new knowledge stops a lot of women from reinventing whatever it is that they want to do. But you really embrace that, which is admirable.
I love the technology. But for me, it's because, you know, I feel that if I'm motivated by really good reasons, you know, if I'm advocating for my books and my readers and I can make a living at the same time and have more creative control. All those things are big motivators. In terms of the technology, I think you're so right. And I talk a lot about technology in my book.
Yes, you do. Yeah, it's very inspiring.
Thank you. I just think it's so important because it is the thing. And whenever I go out and teach reinvention workshops and I tell people one of the biggest pieces of advice I have is to get your tech together. I can see people's eyes glaze over. Those are the ones that need to hear it. And if you start to look at it as a whole big picture, it's totally intimidating. But just take one thing at a time. So that's what I did. I thought, okay, I have to figure out how to get my rights back. That's one thing. I'll start Googling that and figure out how to do it. And then, okay, you know, how do I actually create a publishing company? How do I get books formatted? formatted? Who's going to, how do I figure out covers? And you just, if you look at the whole big picture, you'll freak out. But I think you and I, and a lot of the people listening know that from, you know, the rest of our lives. I mean, writing a book, if I look at all the pages I have to write, I just, right. Even after 12 books, I freak out.
Yeah.
So you just look at what do I have to do today? And that's, I think, what's important. So for me, you know, I have to really be inspired by what I'm going after, and I have to think it matters, and it's a smart move. And then it's just break it down into manageable chunks and make yourself accountable and, you know, find out, start researching. I mean, we are so lucky to be able to just, you know, go online and you can find out anything in the whole world.
That's true. You know, yeah. I know you mentioned in the book, Never Too Late, when you first started, you used to have to buy that big book that said Publisher's Marketplace.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Took forever. Like, even just saying, what's Gary David Goldberg's address? Like, that today you could find it out now. But, like, we used to have to, like, yeah. research agents and all that. And it's just exactly. all out there now. When I get emails like, you know, how do you find an agent? I'm like, Google that. Don't email me. Just Google it.
Exactly. You know, I have to say, to be honest, that is part of the reason I wrote this book, is because I'm sure this happens to you too. You get asked the same questions over and over, and it just is so great to be able to say, oh yeah, that's in there too. Read this, read that. And
well, I'm going to hand them your book now, Claire. I'm just going to carry extra copies around with
me. Well, I'm going to hand them my book too, because, you know, I think, and I remember asking all these questions myself, so they're absolutely part of the process, but I think it's important to have a place to go to get the answers. And you know, it just felt good to me to pull it all together. So
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling and chilling
sure.
there
yes.
with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing, because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer. Yeah. I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. Butcher Box gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox. Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going.
Oh.
Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the mega moisture duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer, and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know, we have raved about the Undaria algae body oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria collagen body oil, youthful, yeah. Liz, your youthful yeah. glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SAD Sisters. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SAD Sisters at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
You sound so excited about this new phase in your career that once again, you've reinvented yourself. Do you have moments of doubt or sleepless nights or...
Don't we all? Yeah. I mean, I think if you don't, you're probably in trouble because, you know, nothing is ever easy. It's right. a bumpy world we live in. But for me, if I'm doing it for the right reasons, if, you know, I'm hoping, I love speaking at conferences and at workshops and all of that. So this helps my own platform. I talk a lot about platform building in that way because everybody can't connect the dots between writing fiction where the heroine is reinventing herself and, you know, speaking about reinvention. So a nonfiction book helps a little in that way too. So yeah, I mean, I think shaking it up is good for all of us. And I will certainly write more novels, but I was surprised how much I loved writing nonfiction. Once I got over the fact that, okay, I can't hide behind my characters anymore. I really, if I'm going to do this right, I absolutely have to tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So, but once I got over that, it was kind of, you know, probably saved me a lot of therapy money.
You know, when women come to your reinvention speeches or when you see them on book tours, why do you think women in particular, I guess everyone wants to reinvent themselves, but I can't think of a conversation I've had with like more than one woman who's reached a certain age where she doesn't talk about, I need to do something about my career. I need to do something about this. Why do you think women in particular like desire reinvention?
Well, you know, I think, I've talked to so many women about this, and I know you have too. I think there are two basic categories. One is that, which was the person that I was, I hid from my buried dream. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, which was to write a novel, but I hid from it. And so I had just buried this dream. And eventually you just hit that place where you can't hide from it anymore. And it's just time. And then I think there's another person who still hasn't figured out what she wants to be when she grows up, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think those are the two scenarios. But also as women, we so often put our own lives on hold because we're bringing up kids, we're taking care of everybody else. And then finally, that fades away a little bit if you're lucky. And there's a little time to do something, which is not to say you haven't been working and doing right. all these other things at the same time, but your focus has been on everyone else. And when that switches around, you know, why are so many women so powerful at midlife? You know, because we finally can be. And I don't regret, I mean, I loved every bit of, you know, the whole mom thing and all of that, but it's
time consuming.
It is. And so when that goes away, there's just so much more time. And I think there's also something that happened for me at midlife, which is you just have the courage to go for it. You know, I'm much less of a people pleaser. I'm much more able to say, okay, I'd rather fail big than not go for it.
Right.
And I did not have the guts to do that personally in my 20s.
Right. And there's a freedom in sort of not caring what people
yeah.
think about you anymore. So
exactly.
You might as well just go for it. Your timeline. You might as well do it.
Exactly. And it's not all about, oh my God, you know, how am I going to look? Is this guy going to ask me out? You know, yeah. I mean, all that stuff kind of frees up a lot of, you know, So,
speaking of that, we have a couple more minutes, but one of the things you do mention is you've had a hair reinvention, and that's exciting.
Speaking of, no one's ever going to look at me
right.
again.
I'm sorry.
No, that's
don't
okay.
take that the wrong way.
I have no idea how the hair invention got in, but people seem to be so interested in it. Who knows? Maybe I'll get to write a new Silver is the New Black will be my next nonfiction book. I've been dying for my hair for so long, since I don't even remember when it first started going gray. And it stopped taking dye. It just did not want to be dyed.
It was done. Your hair was done.
My hair was over it. My hair was over it way before I was even thinking about it. So what do you do? And also, I was planning my whole life around how long my roots would be and if I'd have time to go in and get them covered, because I have brown hair and I'd get the skunk stripe. So I was always, so, you know, every 3 weeks, it was insane. And so finally I just decided I was going to go for it and see what would happen. And I looked for a window of time, and I walked around for about 3 months with a knit hat on my head if I had to leave the house, and was becoming borderline agoraphobic. And I did it. I just went for it. And so now I have sort of salt and pepper hair, but I'm adding low lights, like darker hair. So I think I'm going for basic Cruella de Vil right
awesome.
Now.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. You know, I just kind of like, I think if you can keep it looking intentional, so, and have, you know, so I'm trying to have a funky cut and adding different things. So I don't know how long it will last, but I will never go back to that sort of solid color. I would just do a ton of different highlights or something. So if you want to learn how to reinvent your hair,
right.
Ask me.
If you get nothing else from this interview, think about reinventing your hair. If you get nothing else.
I know,
else.
That probably made no sense. I kind of mumbled through that. But anyway, it was, you know, these are the things that you just, you know, did I ever think I would do that? No. Did I have any desire to go au naturel? No. But, you know, I'm sort of glad I like it now.
Well, you know, it's funny, Claire, I was in Cape Cod a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned to you I was going, and you told me, oh, you have to go to this beautiful bookstore where the sidewalk ends and say
yes,
hello.
Yes, did you meet them?
Yes. So I went in and I said, hello. I said, I'm Leanne. I know Claire Cook. And the woman immediately whipped out her cell phone. She goes, have you seen Claire's hair? Doesn't she look great?
I think I got like, I don't know, 500 or 600 likes on that picture. It was crazy on Facebook. Oh, that's a riot.
Yeah,
Leanne.
That was the first thing she said. So, and she found it. I was like, I love it. It looks great. And then there was the story in the book. So that was fun to read.
That's hilarious. See, those are the things. You could be out there talking up a book till you're blue in the face. You let your hair go gray. Everybody knows. So there's a lesson in that. I don't know what it is.
Next time we talk to you, you'll be on the cover of Vogue, for all we know.
I don't know, maybe AARP, but
all right, we're going to wrap up. We're talking to Claire Cook. You can find Claire, your book is available where? Everywhere?
It is. Yeah, Amazon. If you go to clairecook.com and you can click through to all the links, but Amazon, BNN, Kobo, you know, iBooks, wherever. But there's also, I forgot to say, there's also a free workbook that is kind of a companion to the book, which Yeah, you can go over. I just thought it would be fun to give a little extra gift to keep people inspired in their reinventions. So if you go to clairecook.com, you can just download that on the spot right there.
The book is Never Too Late, Your Roadmap to Reinvention Without Getting Lost Along the Way. Okay, that's the first thing you're going to do if you're going to reinvent yourself. So Claire, to people who are listening, they're ready to take the leap, maybe start that business they've been thinking about or go back to school. What's the second thing? Okay, they're going to buy your book first. What's the second thing you're going to tell women?
Second, they're going to download the workbook.
Yeah, and okay. So the third thing they should do.
Second thing. Honestly, if you haven't admitted to yourself what you want to do, just own it. You know, admit it, write it down. If you don't know, that's your mission. Find out what your reinvention is going to be. Just start putting the time in. And once, I'm already up to three things, sorry.
That's
but
okay.
Once you have made the decision, just take one step, one little step in that direction. You know, it's not a race. You just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And, you know, even big changes happen one step at a time, which I think one of my characters said. I don't even know what I'm quoting, but just start going in the right direction. It doesn't have to be perfect. You and I both know how many mistakes you make along the way.
Right.
Just keep heading for the light.
We've been talking to Claire Cook. Always fun. The book is Never Too Late, Your Roadmap to Reinvention. You can go to satellitesisters.com for links to Claire's pages or go right to clairecook.com. Claire, thank you so, so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so, so much, Leanne, for having me. I loved getting to talk to you again, and I have to meet you in person one day.
I know. One day. Now you've moved to Atlanta. So
I know.
That's exciting.
So you have
different.
To come here or I have to go there.
Absolutely.
We'll meet at a conference somewhere.
Yeah, that I would love.
Can come too.
That I would love. I'm waiting for the kids to leave. I'm just going to go to conferences all the time. Full-time conference.
Wouldn't that be fun? I would love to do that. I would just, we'll start a conference circuit and everyone can come with us.
Okay. Oh, thanks so much to Claire Cook. She is always so much fun to talk to. Her book is out now. Her new website is fully operational. And if you go to clairecook.com, you'll be able to sign up for her newsletter and download the free workbook she's talking about, in addition to getting a copy of her book, Never Too Late. The Road to Reinvention, fantastic. Many thanks to Claire. If you are new to Satellite Sisters, maybe this is the first time you've tuned in, you're a big Claire Cook fan, welcome. We have years of podcasts available. We talk to all kinds of women and we talk about our lives. We would love to have you on board. You can go to satellitesisters.com to find out more about us. You can find us at iTunes or you can find us at Stitcher Radio or you can find us